Hi, I'm Natalie from Boston, Massachusetts.
Hey, this is Edmund from Montana.
Hi, I'm Dan from Ypsilanti, Michigan.
The Sound of Young America is an independent production supported by listeners like you and me.
If you'd like to donate to support the show, visit MaximumFun.org.
And click on Donate.
I'm Jesse Thorne, live on tape from my house in Los Angeles. It's The Sound of Young America from MaximumFun.org and PRI, Public Radio International.
It's The Sound of Young America. I'm Jesse Thorne. We're live on tape this week at the Sundance Film Festival, Park City, Utah. My guests are Sean Welch and Jeffrey Blitz, who just premiered their new documentary here at the fest. When they made their first film together, the spelling bee doc Spellbound, Blitz was behind the camera and Welch was holding the boom mic. I don't think even in their wildest dreams they imagined that their movie, which they financed with credit card debt, would end up nominated for an Oscar. Blitz was a guest on the show when his first fictional feature, Rocket Science, was released a couple of years ago. He's kept busy between then and now, directing episodes of The Office and working on the duo's new film, Lucky. It follows lottery winners and tracks the ways that their windfalls have affected their lives. The film's subjects are multivarious, among them an immigrant couple who used the winnings to fund family members' businesses back in Vietnam, and this guy who was living depressed and in squalor before he hit it big.
I was down to about my last $3. I said, the hell with it, I'm playing the lottery. There was a night that I won the $5.5 million on.
One day, 3 weeks ago, this unemployed 44-year-old walked into this convenience store in suburban Chicago. He had holes in his shoes and 12-year-old glasses held together with a paper clip.
My father always told me, things are tough now, but they got to get better. Be a good captain of the ship, and they're going to get better.
Even though he didn't have enough money for food, he played the lottery and hit the jackpot.
An amazing rags-to-riches story.
It was like a strange feeling. It was like if you left this earth and you went to heaven. That's what it felt like. You know, some people have one life. To me, I have like two lives. It's like a new beginning. Sometimes you got to leave the bad life and start a new life.
Jeffrey Blitz, Sean Welch, welcome back to The Sound of Young America.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
It's great to have you here. Jeffrey was here with his film, which actually also premiered at Sundance, Rocket Science.
That's right.
A couple of years ago. Sean was on when Sean and Jeffrey made their first film, the smash hit documentary Spellbound, which was, what, 6 or 7 years ago now, quite some time ago.
Yeah, we premiered at South by Southwest in early 2002.
So that's eight years ago now, probably. Yeah. 7, 8 years ago. Well, thank you guys so much for being here. It's always a pleasure to have you. I really enjoyed the new film.
Thanks.
We talked a little bit, Jeffrey, when you were last on the show, about your process for what your process was for making Spellbound, which was essentially, if I can paraphrase from long ago memory, involved you holding a camera, Sean holding a boom, and both of you holding a lot of credit card accounts.
Yes.
This new documentary, how was it different to make a film after you'd already had a very successful documentary and certainly a highly critically successful feature film in your back pocket?
Only the last of those three things changed. I still shoot, for better or worse, and Sean still does the sound. But it's no longer on our credit cards, thankfully.
Yeah. We were able to find a company that was willing to back us, Big Beach. And 5.5 years ago, we met with them, gave them the pitch to do a project on lottery winners. They instantly got it. And so it's been a wonderful and supportive partnership.
I should say that they were drunk at that first meeting. So it was a breakfast meeting, but they were drunk. And that's probably why we're here right now.
Yeah, like we are now.
Well, you've got a good sense of how Hollywood works. When you're making Spellbound, you're making a movie about kids. And I would expect that you would anticipate difficulty convincing parents to let you talk to their kids. And when you're just two guys, you know, one with a camera, one with a boom pole and, a pocket full of credit cards. How is it different
approaching subjects for this lottery documentary where you're guys who have been nominated for an Oscar Spellbound, and you know you have a track record as you know you're not exactly gonna you know 60 minutes anybody.
Yeah, I mean the funny thing is we thought that on the basis of that that for however hard it was on Spellbound that any future doc would not be that hard, and we were exactly wrong about this. Somehow it was much harder for us to get lottery winners to say yes. Than it was to get parents to let us into the bedroom of their children.
And even on this project with lottery winners, we had the benefit of including a DVD of Spellbound, or what we thought would be a benefit, including a DVD of Spellbound in our opening letter to them. These people didn't care.
Yeah, that's right.
They didn't know what Spellbound was.
Yeah, right. And but the thing is, I don't think that was based on their sense of Spellbound. It's just that lottery winners, immediately after they win, their mission in life is to try to hide. We just become one of many people who are approaching them for something. Most other people are approaching them for money. But even so, we want time and exposure. And I think they fear, most of them, the greater exposure is just going to lead to more crazy people asking them for crazy things.
And none of them has anything as awesome to say as, "Do I sound like a musical robot?"
Yes, right.
Yeah, you're referring to Harry from Spellbound.
If you guys pitched me on a documentary about me, I would just be terrified that I would never say anything that great in my entire life, and thus would suffer in comparison.
I think I was in Vancouver, and I saw a T-shirt that says, "Does this sound like a musical robot?" on a T-shirt. That was pretty great.
That was a magical moment in cinema. No,
yeah. Well, I mean, for me, it was probably better than the Oscar nomination to see that on a T-shirt in Vancouver. That was great.
So what do you think it was? The film follows a number of different lottery winners. What do you think it was that was different about these particular people or something that you did that got you entree into their lives?
God, I think like with a lot to do with the lottery, it was a numbers game actually. And we just ended up having to approach so many people over such a long period of time that the prep work on it, the research and the prep that we thought would be a few months ended up being years. And that ultimately, because we just went for, you know, such a big group that we had enough breakthroughs of people who were interested and who seemed like their stories would be compelling. But man, it took a long time.
Did you think about what this movie was going to be before you started talking to people? Were there themes in this, you know, years of research that you ended up doing because it was so tough to put together that started to come up for you?
Well, for me, the funny thing is before we started shooting, I thought that, if Spellbound ended up being sort of in part about a spelling bee, but more about this American dream, that before we started on Lucky, I thought that it was going to be a documentary about God in America, actually, and that for anyone who aspired to win or had won, that it would open up these great questions about fate and what their role was. But I was the only person who thought that, actually, as it turns out. So we discovered sort of quickly in that whatever the underlying ideas of the film would be, that we would just have to listen and let the subjects sort of speak them, which is actually, I think, the way that the best docs get made. So it ended up being much more about the idea of how people think they're going to go from A to Z, when sometimes really what the transformation of the lottery is about is to go from like a lowercase a to a big, giant, bold-faced A in caps.
Yeah, and I was going to add that we do like that it's a companion piece to Spellbound. I mean, Spellbound was about kids who, in their pursuit of the American dream, apply themselves and work hard, Protestant work ethic, dedication. And here with the lottery winners, these people's lives are transformed in an instant by no other work on their behalf other than going to the local store to buy this lottery ticket.
it's interesting in that it's like it's almost a mirror image. I mean, particularly considering that with the spelling bee, I mean, the spelling bee is a competition that is, I mean, I don't want to say it's entirely meaningless, but the meaning is completely invested from the outside. I mean, spelling in 2010 is an almost useless skill. You know, you have to, all you need is a rough approximation. I can't, you know, I know how to spell things and I can't write them on my phone. So I got big thumbs. So that's like a direct contradiction, is these people working so hard for the completely abstract idea of hard work and self-improvement with this objective being spelling really good. Whereas this other thing is this completely no work at all and all of the tangible rewards.
Yeah, it was really stark for us to see actually how in Spellbound, what the final point of it was not important, but it was how they felt about it and how it gave them a sense of a sense of sort of what their role in the world might be. And in Lucky, it's very interesting to see how people who are engaged in a process where there's no journey, there's just like the pot of gold at the end, they are cut adrift from their own identity in a way. And that, you know, it ends up being, I think, in some sense, a movie about how the tangible stuff ends up being not as important as the journey. And that, you know, people, their sense of themselves comes from their work and their family and their friends and their neighborhood and all these things that as soon as you win is in one day is, I don't know if it's right to say that like your family is stripped from you in one day, but certainly work and neighborhood and friends, you know, like how your family views you and how you view them and all that. It's all different.
I mean, even family, one of the winners that you profile who had one of the toughest times of any of the folks that you profile in the film, had a sibling literally take out a contract on his life and try to have him killed for his money.
Yeah. In fact, it wasn't just one sibling. It was a couple brothers and a sister who seemed
they
like...
They teamed up?
Well, it doesn't... they seem like... Yeah, at some point they may have teamed up, but they operated as independent assassins as well.
Yeah, over multiple times and multiple ways too.
One of the winners that you profile in the film is a mathematician. And he talks about why he played the lottery as a mathematician who knows that the odds are against him. And he says that what he always said he was buying was the fantasy. He talks about how much he wants a Lamborghini.
Yeah.
And he finds that when he actually gets his money and wins, what he wants from that money changes completely.
Yeah, that it, as soon as it becomes a real thing, that he is actually a case of someone who may have been better off if his whole life it was just about what the fantasy of winning was. And when he actually won and it was a real thing to deal with, the fantasies no longer applied. And so he had to reimagine what his place in the world was and what his idea for the money would be. So he ended up with a Volvo instead of a Lamborghini that I think he traded up to a Lexus at some point. So that says something. But and he ended up feeling like the important thing to do was to try to do good in the world. And so he wanted his life to stay the same as much as it could. But the world doesn't really let that happen for lottery winners for the most part.
It really doesn't let it happen for him. I mean, it's hard to say because we weren't there, but he pretty much directly attributes the breakup of his marriage to having won the lottery.
Yeah, it seems like that. He's quite certain that had that not happened, that for better or worse, that his wife would not have left him. But that as soon as they won and she was entitled to half of it, she didn't, I guess his side of the story there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that in the fantasy vision of the lottery, you don't imagine the world around you going through any significant change. You just feel like you get to stay in your life, but you get to drive a nicer car, or, you know, you can afford, you know, healthcare or whatever. And that's true up to a point. But as soon as the jackpot gets big, then everything changes, whether you want it to or not.
More with Jeffrey Blitz and Sean Welch after a break on The Sound of Young America from MaximumFun.org and PRI, Public Radio International.
Production of The Sound of Young America is underwritten in part by Ask Metafilter. Thousands of life's little questions answered online at ask.metafilter.com.
On Thursday, February 25th, The Sound of Young America presents Laugh Night in downtown Los Angeles. It's a comedy taping for The Sound of Young America, and it's also a benefit for the kids' art programs at ArtShare. For $8, you can check out six amazing comedians, Greg Barrett, Don Glover, Karen Kilgariff, James Adomian, Holly Mills, and Nick Adams, all handpicked by The Sound of Young America. And 100% of the dollars you pay at the door go to pay for free arts classes for kids and teenagers in downtown L.A. For more information or to make your reservations, go to MaximumFun.org/laughnight. That's MaximumFun.org/laughnight. And I hope we'll see you on Thursday, February 25th.
It's The Sound of Young America. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guests are Jeffrey Blitz, the director, and Sean Welch, the producer and boom microphone operator of the new documentary Lucky, which just premiered here at the Sundance Film Festival, where we're recording this show. They were also nominated for an Oscar for their first documentary, Spellbound, and Jeffrey made the critically acclaimed fictional feature film, Rocket Science. Jeffrey, you talked a little bit about the way that people relate to fate when they win the lottery. And you said, as you said, it wasn't an interesting topic to the people who had won the lottery, but it seemed to have come up the most with a subject that you interviewed who was a regular lottery player, spending, her sister says, $50 to $70 a day, if I remember correctly, on lottery tickets. And it has never won more than, I think she says one time she won $5,000.
Yeah, that's right.
She is a person of very deeply held faith, and she talks in the film about she struggles, you know, vocally with the idea of whether God wants her to play the lottery, and if she won, whether that would be God telling her that she was doing a good thing. And it's amazing. It's amazing the way that the lottery sort of forces people to think about their own, you know, to think about their moral choices, and also think about how much influence they or some outside power has over something that is essentially random.
Well, the thing is, I think that's actually only half true, which is that at sporting events or with the lottery or when you gamble, a lot of people, when they win, they attribute it to God, but when they don't, there's no thought of God to it. It's not, and so I think with Verna in the film, as she herself says, that when she wins, she's on this sort of high, and she feels like she has a guardian angel of some sort. But when she doesn't win, it doesn't stay with her as an experience. She doesn't think about it, which I think tells you a lot about sort of what the psychology of that stuff is, and how, but also just how interesting it is that people define God according to what suits them. And of course, like this, you know, I don't scold people for doing that, but I do think it's interesting. And, you know, and it does sort of go to show in a way that when something good happens to you and it feels like it's out of the blue, you want that to, or a lot of people will want that to suggest that that means something about the way that the world works. But when something bad happens, that thought doesn't occur.
It's kind of like a natural human thing to want to impose order onto disorder and give reason to things that don't have reason.
Yeah, sure. And so for me, I just thought that when your life has changed in such a gigantic way, you would be forced to try to put some sort of meaning onto it, or you would just be cut adrift and you would be lost. And the interesting thing that we found is that instead of having people put meaning on it, most of them go through at least a stretch where they are lost, that it's such a gigantic change and they just have no framework for being able to accept that their lives have been completely upended and it's happened in a way that is totally random. I think that's very hard for anyone to grapple with.
The mathematician that is profiled in the film talks about that like specifically. He just says, you know, I went through years where I had no idea who I was. It's terrifying. It must be difficult to even to talk to somebody about that.
Yeah, I think. I mean, I think for us one of the points where the film feels like it starts to get past the very simple way that people think about the lottery, either in the fantasy of it or the flip side to it, that, you know, that, you know, I think people have the notion that to win is either completely evil or completely great. And for me, one of the places where the movie starts to break through that and gets more interesting is when people start to address the loss of identity that happens with it, which to me was completely unexpected, but is for the most part shared by all of our lottery winners, I think.
You have a couple in the film who win an absolutely monstrous lottery award or whatever they're called. It's
jackpot.
It's a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 digit win, like right. $100, $110, $125 million,
yeah,
something like that.
Yeah.
You speak to some of their friends, and they basically openly say to you, when we look at them, it's impossible not to see the money, not to feel, you know, a million feelings, but certainly jealous. Envious, you know, questions about who deserves it. That must have been unbelievable to experience in person, to be there and have someone say that to you with cameras in the whole nine yards.
Yeah. It's a great moment when you're working on a documentary and someone speaks the truth. You know, it's what you aspire to, you know, oftentimes in docs, when people don't speak the truth, they don't speak it in ways that shed some light on who they are, so it's interesting. But when someone just cuts through it and shares exactly what they're feeling, it can be amazing. Sean and I were just talking about, there's a line that did not make it into the film because ultimately the way it came across on tape was not as great as it was live. But live, this friend in her kitchen, she talks about how she tries to imagine what life for their friends who have won is like now. And she says something, God, it was so beautiful and really funny. It ended up being too complicated in its structure to use, but where she says she thinks they play golf all day and that they live like Michael Jackson, which I just thought it was so odd. Like the whole thing was so odd. And I wanted to use the line, but it was so confusing.
I mean,
taken out of context.
One of the things that's most odd about that is just the idea that, I mean, I'm a huge Michael Jackson fan, frankly, but the idea that that one would like to live like Michael Jackson.
Well, for me, it's the idea that Michael Jackson played golf at all. Where did that come from?
There's that couple has a couple of adolescent kids. I don't know exactly how old the one's talking about going to college, so I'm guessing he's 17. Maybe the girl is a little younger than him, 15,
yeah,
16.
That's right.
And it seems like that loss of identity is particularly traumatic when it comes at the point in your life where you're establishing your identity. And the son talks about how he just wants to keep his job. He works at a chicken place. He just says, I don't know. I just want to keep my same job, and I want to go to a college where I can keep my same job at the chicken place. And he says so sincerely, what was it like to talk to people who were in that kind of like that formative moment when they had this huge dislocation.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, his mom says about herself, actually, that her whole life, she just wanted to fit in. That's all she wanted. And that as soon as they won, it changed all of that. And she didn't fit anywhere anymore. That incredibly rich people are very dubious of lottery winners. And, you know, and people who are not incredibly rich don't feel like, you know, those winners exist in their world anymore. But I think what she was describing actually is intensely true at that adolescent age, where really, for most people, your primary goal is to fit in. And all of a sudden, in order for them to continue to fit in high school, they have to act like this thing does not apply to them. It only applies to their parents. But of course, in some ways, that can't possibly be true. So, you know, whether their friends play along with that or not, or man, I think it was probably incredibly difficult for them. I do think that they were both, that because the family was as grounded as it was, that that they were really stable kids, and that they probably handled it, I imagine, they handled it well.
There are a lot of class dislocations in the film, as you would expect from a movie about people winning the lottery. Not a lot of people who already have $100 million win the lottery, I'm sure. Probably the most stark is a guy who basically goes from zero to lottery winner. You show a clip from a report on Inside Edition or Hard Copy or something like that, where they show him before he won this jackpot, and he talks a little bit about what he was like before he won this jackpot. And he was living in a home that was, had layers of feces on the windowsills from his cats, and he had lost his parents, which were the most important people in his lives. And according to his friend / self-described manager, he was, you know, like mildly enfeebled after he lost his parents. And he went from that to being mega, mega rich. I should also mention depressed to the point of considering suicide, and spent one of his last $3 on the lottery ticket. What was it like to see someone whose identity had changed so dramatically when that person's identity was so desperate and sad and end of the rope to begin with?
Well, I think the interesting thing is that the place where the lottery seems to work for people is when they don't have the ability to satisfy their basic means. And then you can't help but think that whatever the transformation is has got to be good, you know? So he went from a guy who wanted to end his life to a guy who, for however odd he is and how he lives now, is glad to be alive. And it became clear as we were filming that really it seemed like people who were able to satisfy what their basic needs were did fine, and that it's people who ended up with so much more that it, you know, that the questions that they had to deal with were not questions of basic needs anymore, but whether we want, you know, 10 cars or 12 or whatever, that was the place where things started to get shady.
There's a family in the film who are Vietnamese immigrants, husband and wife were Vietnamese immigrants, and, you know, well into middle age. And they won a lottery as part of a group play at a factory where the husband worked. That immigrant story is such a classic American dream story. It must be strange to see it through the lens of someone who, you know, has worked so incredibly hard and gotten not that much out of it, and then has a windfall, a monstrous windfall through, you know, happenstance almost.
I think for us, it was a great example of how whatever your inherent personality is, or whoever you are deep down inside, that the lottery seems to just allow that to be writ large then. And here was a family that was a really solid family from the start and had been through so much hardship and heartache. And you can imagine that had they not won the lottery, life would have been fine for them. I mean, it would have been hard because they were both both husband and wife worked the graveyard shift in a meat packing plant in Nebraska. So life was hard. But in terms of basic level of happiness, the two of them seemed to be very settled in terms of who they were and pleased with that. And that then when they won, that just got, you know, that just was made extreme in a way, which was, for our movie, I think, an important thing to see, that it's not that when you win, everything goes wrong necessarily, but, you know, sort of when you win, whoever you are deep down ends up just being expressed in some incredibly loud way to the world.
Spending 5 years making this movie must have made you wonder about who you were deep down.
Jeff is a lottery winner.
Well, yeah, actually, that's only largely untrue. I've only played the lottery twice. I played Sean had the idea that before we started to shoot, I should have the experience of playing. So I went and did a quick pick thing, and I won $55 on it, which I thought, I assumed that this was like a very common thing, and that's why people would play. And Sean said that, Sean said no, that in fact, the next time I played, I would lose. So I didn't play again. And then at the end of the film, Sean said that in advance of having to do press, that I should have the experience to play again so I could lose and I could say I'd won and lost. So I won $7 the second time, and I'm going to stop now.
So if you happen to have a miraculous windfall, let's say a lottery ticket happened to be blowing down the street, or say this lottery ticket that you guys handed me before we started the interview on the back of the flyer for your movie, let's say I gave that to you, and what personality traits would you be scared of or worried about? Given that $50 million?
Well, there are some states that allow the prize winners to claim their jackpots anonymously. And I would scurry as quickly as possible to that state. I'd go underground and wouldn't let you or Ben chase me around with the camera. As most people do, I think these days that are lottery winners, they become immediately protective and they surround themselves with financial advisors, attorneys, sometimes publicists. I'm not sure I would surround myself with all of those, but certainly a financial advisor, and I'd keep it to myself, keep a very low profile.
How do you think it would affect your relationships? Would you be scared?
If I could remain anonymous, I wouldn't be as scared. I think it would give Jeffrey and me an opportunity to go out and do some more films without having to go out and pitch to other financiers. But the immediate relationships, I've thought about it, and I thought that I would gather my friends and family in a room, depending on the size of the jackpot, and we would discuss the needs of the people as a group, and then I think I would meet with them on individual levels and then decide how the money might be distributed.
I should just say all of that is a lie, by the way. That Sean has told me that if he wins the lottery, he has a script that he wrote. He's going to star in it also. I think it's a remake of Gone with the Wind, he said. He's going to be playing Scarlett and Rhett, I think he said, is his lifelong dream. So it's very expensive, but if he wins, that's his ambition.
You're going to spend the money on doing it in color this time.
Yes. Are you available to direct, Jeff?
It depends on the price, right?
I guess so, yeah.
Well, guys, thank you so much for taking this time to be on The Sound of Young America. It was great to have you, as always.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jesse.
Jeffrey Blitz is the director, and Sean Welch, the producer of the new film, Lucky, which just premiered here at the Sundance Film Festival. It'll soon be headed to a theater near you. You can keep tabs on it at luckyatsundance.com or facebook.com/lucky.
That's our time for another Sound of Young America program. I've been your host, Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart. The show produced by Speaking Into Microphones. Our Sundance episodes produced and directed as well as edited by Nick White. Our music provided by Dan Wally. Benjamin R. Harrison directed the videos of our interviews at Sundance, which you can find online at MaximumFun.org. Our thanks to Eric Bright PR for providing us with a space to record. If you have thoughts about the show, you can email me at Jesse, J-E-S-S-E, at MaximumFun.org. And you can always visit us on the web at MaximumFun.org, where we've got The Sound of Young America and all of our other great shows absolutely for free, downloadable, streamable, or via podcast. We'll see you next time, right here on The Sound of Young America.